Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. On this episode of Ira's Everything Bagel, we dive into the shadowy intersection of crime, power, and national security with author and former Justice Department insider Chad Boudreau. His new thriller, Mob Justice, plunges readers into the dangerous world of the modern Chicago mob, where a Justice Department lawyer, a conflicted mafia consigliere, and a hidden network of power players collide in a race to stop a war that could engulf the city. Drawing on real-world experience from the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security, Chad crafts thrillers that feel ripped from the headlines. We'll talk about the realities behind organized crime, the influence of power behind the scenes, and how his insider career fuels his fiction. Chad's novel, Mob Justice, is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and bookshops.org, as well as all the usual places. And for everything about Chad, go to chadboudreau.com, B-O-U-D-R-E-A-U-X. chadboudreau.com. Follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Chad, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So how do you find, you're a busy guy, because I was rereading your bio, and the fact that you're so busy, how do you find time to write a novel? And not just one novel, this is a sequel in a way.
Yeah, I wake up really early, and that's the only way.
I see. You're actually 23, but you look like you're 40, so that's how you do it, right? It's just the extra work. So
yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you get to choose what you're going to do in your free time. I have plenty of things to do in my free time, and I just don't spend a whole lot of time watching Netflix. And so I use book writing as a way to pass the time.
Yeah, I like that approach. You get more productive, more creative that way too. Instead of just, what's the word they used to call it when you sat there and watched television all the time? Newton Minow had it. It was
couch potato.
Yeah, couch potato is good. There's even further back in time, and I just can't think of it because of my pollen, but he called it the Great Wasteland. Something, I'm paraphrasing Minow from the FCC in the 60s. But at any rate, so this particular novel is, I mentioned it as a sequel because you've written on the subject before. Do you want to touch about real briefly your first book and then how this book takes it forward?
Yeah, so the first book was called Scavenger Hunt, and it was about a protagonist named Blake Hudson who worked at the Department of Justice at an early age at a pretty high level. And he got caught up in a clandestine group that was really put together to combat terrorism threats. And in doing so in a way that was usurped, you know, a lot of the requirements that we have in place. He didn't know that till it was too late, and then got caught up in the swarm there. And then he went from being the hunter to the hunted. So the book is really about him, and now he escaped all of that and got through some very difficult issues to stay alive and to get his job done. Mob Justice is the sequel to Scavenger Hunt. I had one book in between that was off-brand, but there was a call for more Scavenger Hunt characters. And so we decided to make a series out of it. And this is number two in the series. It's a book you can pick up without having read the first one. Mm-hmm. And you'll know exactly what's going on. And it's a complete book within itself. But the first one, you know, had a lot of people wanting a second one. So it was actually perfect because the story that I had in mind was well suited to a sequel.
Did you have to clear the book with any government agency? I know that people that work in certain government agencies, when they leave and they write a book, even if it's a novel, they have to kind of clear it to make sure there's no things that are in there that may not necessarily be shared with the general public. Did you have to do that with Mob Justice?
Did not have to do that with Mob Justice. I did that with Scavenger Hunt. I thought that I probably would need to at the time. In retrospect, I probably didn't. But at the time that I wrote Scavenger Hunt, you know, the whole terrorism world was coming into formation, and the requirements around what you should know and shouldn't know. I certainly knew I wasn't using any classified information in the book, but just a lot of the themes were things that I just felt much more comfortable getting it cleared.
I was just thinking about, if you go back to World War II as just one example, there was terrorism, there were foreign enemies, and there was the mob, and the mob cooperated with the federal government, our federal government, to fight the Axis powers in a lot of different ways, including the docks. And I'm wondering whether these days, and you're basing your novel again, Mob Justice, are you seeing it differently now? In other words, are there any allegiances that the mob would have to American society against terrorists from various countries around the world?
I mean, I think that our mob has always, even the Sicilian-based mob, has always been very pro-America. And, you know, just basically taking care of themselves in ways that best suit the family, right? And so if it's in the good interest of the family, the best interest of the family, they're going to go with the family every time. I think the mob today is much different in the way that even the mob of the 40s and, you know, since then has been. It's evolved over time to be a little bit more businesslike. And they're much more savvy now that we've had new laws that have come out and very aggressive prosecutors, including some of my former bosses, who have implemented statutes like the RICO statute to take them out. And so they've one of the things in mob justice is kind of this tension between the old school thinking of the mob that we're going to take whatever we want, however we want it, juxtaposed with kind of the new thinking of the mob, which is we need to blend into society and be more businesslike, as long as it whatever it takes to get our profits that we need and take care of our families.
When you were sitting down and coming up with these characters, which are evident in the first novel too, how did you put these characters together? How did you draw it from your real life experiences? Were there people that you witnessed or interacted with, and then you did an amalgam of their characteristics, or was there a particular person that, for example, that you wrote about that who is still around who thinks, "Hey, wait a minute, that's me. I'm that Chad's writing about."
Yeah, to be clear, I've never really, as far as I know, I've never really hung out closely with members of the mafia. So I want to make that clear. And so
I was suggesting, Chad, not just necessarily the mafia, but also government authorities as well, taking your inspiration in terms of characters, et cetera.
Yeah, I often borrow the same term you use, which is it's an amalgamation of people that I worked with at the Department of Justice primarily. I mean, this is Blake Hudson is a Justice Department lawyer, but, you know, also at the Department of Homeland Security, there are several people there that aren't characters in my book, but they certainly inspired certain characters, and they normally are an amalgamation of different people. I would think a lot of people think that I'm Blake Hudson. I'm not Blake Hudson, even though I started at the same time he did and had a similar role. But you know, that was part of the inspiration, and then I took people that I thought were much better than I was, and you know, Blake is more characteristic of that. But just to go back, I mean, even though with the caveat that I gave you on the mobster side, I mean, I spent a lot of time in doing research for this book. I spent a lot of time like reading some of the mob books that have been written, both fiction and nonfiction. I think I watched almost every mob movie all the way back to the 30s. And so I didn't want to make it, you know, kind of that comedy character kind of characters. I wanted real characters, but they do. It's funny because when you talk to prosecutors who went after the mob, who listened to all the wiretaps and all the bugs and all those things, they said that the Godfather series was really like a big inspiration on the mafia families. They started to talk like Scorsese's and Puzo's characters. And so you actually can draw a lot from just what you see on TV and what you read to kind of come up with these characters. And then, of course, you know, working with people who had taken down the mob, they had their stories. And so I always made mental notes about all of those when I had the chance.
It's life imitating art in the sense that gangsters are imitating what they see in the Godfather movies or the character.
And then Enzo Renzi, who is one of the characters that Blake Hudson is going after in the book, is he's an amalgamation of a government character and a mafia character. He's a Supreme Court clerk who went to the dark side. So it's a little bit of everything.
When you started to put this together, the second book, it's not nonfiction. Double negative there, getting caught up in my pollinated brain there for a second. Did you talk to people about the novel itself and what you wanted to do with it, and got some feedback from fellow colleagues or people that you had met that would give you some insight? In other words, you did a lot of research, but at the point you started to write the novel, then did you talk to people and say, okay, here's what I want to do about this character. Like, Blake, I want to do this, this, and this. Does this make sense to you? And you would ask a former colleague or someone else in that.
Yeah, so the answer to that question is it's nuanced. So I'll just make it, I mean, I've been collecting the story over several years. And right. so, and drawing upon people smarter than me who've lived in this world. So I think a lot of that kind of moved forward and was still there. There was, I'll give you an example of where that really was acute. The one of the beta readers for my book, he, former prosecutor, U.S. attorney, you know, head of the DEA, he very much steeped in wiretapping and prosecutors and all of this. He, when he beta read my book, he did not like the fact that Blake was doing things that a prosecutor normally wouldn't do. And so not meaning like outside of the roles and responsibilities, but just breaking the rules in some instances to kind of survive. He did not like that at all. And he would write on there, no, prosecutor wouldn't do that. My editor, on the other hand, was like, oh yeah, he's breaking some rules, because if he doesn't break rules, this is going to be the most boring book you've ever read. But I had to balance those two. So when you read Mob Justice, so I need the prosecutors and the law enforcement on my side, so I don't want to turn them off. And so for those readers who will eventually buy the book and read the book, you'll see that occasionally Blake will say, I know a prosecutor would never do this, but, then, you know, he gets into trouble and then we'll see if he gets out of it. But that's the way I balanced those two competing preferences.
Do those characters ever take you over as opposed to you taking over the characters?
Yeah. So I talk about this a lot. You know, Stephen King in his book On Writing talks about how this works. And when I first read it, I was like, that's hokey. That's not who I am. And then I started writing books and I found myself, you know, writing 50 chapter outline, which was more scaffolding than, you know, explicit detail. And then I have these characters and I think they're going to do these things. And you get to about chapter 20 and they're locked in on who they are and their behaviors. And there's certain things they can and cannot do, or you're going to break their character. And then you put them in the most intense situation imaginable that you don't think anybody can get out of. And they do the craziest things. And of course, it's coming from my mind. But at the same time, they have taken over. Like in my second book, which we haven't talked about, it's called Homecoming Queen. I have a protagonist named Annika Raven, and she surprised me. She surprised me the most because she did some crazy stuff. And I always say she is she's got all the attributes of the most powerful and coolest women that I know. And then she's got all of my messiness, and the messiness comes out. It's crazy. And so she turned my story on its head, and it's completely different than where I thought it was going to be when I started, but it's so much more fun to read. And so I love the way that works, because the characters, when they do take over, as you say, it always makes for a better story.
You come across to me as a very rational, linear guy. And yet at the same time, you're creating these books, including Mob Justice, available everywhere. Is there a duality about you that we don't know about?
I wouldn't call it a duality. I mean, I'm a complete person, but I was raised by a 19-year-old single mom and who was very creative. I think she was a hippie at heart. But she also said that, you know, nobody's going to give you anything and you've got to go be the first one to go to college. And I've got a family to feed and I've got a lot of responsibility at work. So you'll have the serious side of me. But my creative side is always there as well.
That doesn't sound like a hippie mob. That sounds like a very grounded person.
Yeah, my mom.
Of course. Yeah. That's good. You mentioned about putting your character into an intense situation. I don't know what would be more intense than your situation where you joined the Department of Justice the night before September 11th and the attacks. So you're starting this whole new career, or at least you're starting this whole new position. That might be a better term. And all of a sudden, everything hits the fan. Did that infuse your writing style to some extent? Did that play a part in how you approach your books?
I think so. So I just spent my weekend in Austin, where I started my legal career, and I was a doctor who largely, I was a lawyer who largely defended doctors as at a very young age, and had worked there for about 3 years. I bring that up because going back home to Texas and Austin in particular, I was reminded this would have been my life, because I was around a bunch of other Texas lawyers and I didn't know many of them. And I said, this would have been my life had I not been, you know, sent up to DC and worked for the department. And I love my life, and that I'm sure that was a great life too. But the intensity around the nation's capital when I got there was so much. I think it inspired me to write, because I looked around and I saw things I'd never seen before. And it also gave me a lot of the stories that I write, because even though I'm not writing about nonfiction, a lot of the things that I write about are stuff that kind of areas that I worked on and people that I worked with. And but when you read my books, none of my books are political with a capital P, but they are political small P, in a sense that what I want the reader to understand is when my characters get in these situations, and Blake Hudson in particular, what you see on CNN or MSNBC or Fox, whatever your news outlet is never really the ground truth in how people have to deal with issues behind the curtain. And so I will put my characters in positions where there's a great national security threat or crime threat, and then there is a privacy interest over here that is competing with that. And a lot of times and that's just one example. A lot of times everybody wants to give the binary, you got to do this or that. Well, I want the reader to be in a situation where they get to choose, right? And they can choose whether or not the character made the right decision. But more times than not, even people who are highly partisan on each side, and there's nothing wrong with that, I don't really care where you are politically, but I will make you think about what a real world situation looks like and what the real actors in the world, again, mostly career people behind the scenes, those decisions that they have to make. And I think that's really how it inspires my writing and my time there, because I struggled with that when I was there. I never struggled with right or wrong, but I struggled with, okay, if you were Blake Hudson and you knew that if you didn't break the law here, that there was going to be a terrorist that lets a bomb off at your building and kills people, like what decision are you going to make?
Right.
And hopefully it's a vehicle for thought.
And I was thinking too that it wasn't just an intellectual experience that you had on 9/11, because the Pentagon was attacked as well as the Twin Towers. So you saw a physical verification of the evil right there in front of you in DC.
Yeah, I mean, it was all around us. My first project at the Department of Justice was creating, with help, the September 11 Victim Compensation Fund. That was ultimately ended up being a $7 billion fund that it helped the airlines stay in business on the one hand, but it also compensated the victims of those killed and those physically injured on the other. And so I was up close and personal with the victims themselves during that grieving period. And so it hit home very harshly, and not as harshly as for me, obviously, than those that lost loved ones, because I didn't. But to be as young as I was and, you know, helping manage that fund and working with the victims' families throughout that process was very harrowing for me. So, yeah, I remember it almost like yesterday.
I bet. When you came up with the character of Blake, and you'll notice we're kind of nonlinear here, which is kind of how I structure these things. I don't necessarily stay in one lane as we go back and forth. But to me, it's more conversational Perfect. That way. But when you came up with the character of Blake, you had a choice to model him after, I'll just say, person A, B, and C, not just person A. So when you put these amalgamated aspects of his personality and actions together, was there one or two people that you focused on initially and then expanded the character, the characterizations and the characteristics of him beyond those two or three people?
I'm going to answer that in a couple of different ways. The first thing I'll say is it wasn't that intentional. And so I probably had Blake in mind. So it wasn't really like a multiple choice, like, okay, do I want it to be this person or this more like this person? It definitely was not that intentional. I think I know myself well enough, and I've spoken with other writers. We're lying to ourselves if we say a character doesn't have certain characteristics that we've gleaned from others. It's just, that's the way it works. And so I don't know how I would shape it. The main thing, the second way I'd answer that is, the main thing that I see in Blake Hudson that I think really is appealing is he's extremely brilliant in his mind, and he's got a good heart, but he's also a little naive because he's young and he's thrown into these big situations. And so I think he expects the best and he never gets the best. And then so he has to work his way out of that. And so that's really what I wanted to hit home with Blake. He's not a know-it-all. He's trying to learn things, and he has a certain perception and presumption when he goes into it. And he's ultimately, normally at least, he has to learn a lesson and has to figure a way to get out of it.
In Mob Justice, which is the second book in this series about Blake, I want to just go back to how you as a writer define your character. And what I mean by that is I'm always intrigued by writers. I like nonfiction more than fiction, but I'm always intrigued by how writers can create a character that stays on the page, is absorbed by the reader, and carries forward through action in the book. And I guess my question is, it's a long way around to ask the question, but how do you get his character down quickly so those people who didn't read the first book but are now reading Mob Justice can get a sense of his character very quickly? Because if you don't grab the reader initially, you may lose them for the rest of the book. So how does that work as a writer?
Well, just, you know, circumstantially, Blake is put into a situation that I think is very interesting for most readers. And so they're going to want to know kind of what does he do and why is he doing it and where is he? And so that kind of takes care of itself. But then I want my protagonist to always be honest and brave. And I think, you know, in Mob Justice, you find Blake right out of the gate. He's in trouble. He's in the doghouse at DOJ, and you learn that he was somewhat of a hero in the first book, but now we have a new president and they want to get rid of this stain of Scavenger Hunt, which was the operation name. And so he's kind of the scapegoat. And through that process, you have a character that you think actually did the best that he could, and he's actually considered a hero by some. So why is he being treated like this by his own institution, which he loves? And I think throughout that early process, you get a really good sense of who he is, who he's not. And I think most people will be rooting for him by at least chapter 3.
Well, that's fair. Now, the other character, Enzo, totally different character, clearly. Again, too, you have to establish something about him very quickly to grab the reader's attention. So what was it about Enzo's character? He has an Ivy League mind, but his conscience is, let us say, as you call it, buried somewhere in there. And it's representative, I think, of that newer generation of mobsters in that sense. But how do you establish, if it's not, with Blake, you could establish empathy. With Enzo, I don't think you want to establish empathy, but you want to establish fascination or interest. And how do you go about doing that as a writer?
So I would say that for Blake, I want to establish empathy, and for Enzo, I want to establish sympathy. And I think he's a survivalist. And so you see a young Enzo who's just trying to put, you know, food in his mouth, and you know he's got all these amazing skills. You don't know the depth of them yet, and you don't really know his heart yet. But then as the chapters go on, you're supposed to not like Enzo. He's a bad guy. He's a consigliere for a crime family.
Right.
And he's hard not to like. And so when you there's a scene in my book where Blake and Enzo are sitting down together, which the prosecutors would say that would never happen because the prosecutor becomes a witness. Well, it's happening in my book, and I think it can happen. And so they're sitting down together, and what they find is though Enzo chose the dark side and Blake chose the side of the angels, apparently, maybe the side of the angels really isn't the side of the angels, and maybe the dark side really isn't as dark as you think. and you start to see that they have these common interests where they can have a conversation that no one else in the world can have. And so I think my biggest challenge now is I think my readers of Mob Justice, I think a lot of them like Enzo more than Blake. And so
well, there's that awful gray area you're bringing up there.
Exactly. So it's putting yourselves in different characters, and then you find out that, hey, maybe it wasn't exactly the way I thought it would be.
Yeah. Do you get reactions from people who are on either side of the aisle once the book is out, which it is, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera? The book is out. Do you get feedback from people, say former colleagues of yours in law enforcement, and perhaps people you've met on the other side that have read the book? And do they comment to you about either the characters are very real, or that there's this particular scenario couldn't work the way you wrote about it, but they still enjoyed it, et cetera?
Absolutely. So my biggest readers fanship is really on in the law enforcement community, in the intelligence community, and the Homeland Security Committee. So when I went out and started to write Scavenger Hunt, I knew that I had a huge challenge to get a book published as a first-time author, but I was going to fail even before that effort began if I failed with my colleagues and the experts in the field, because I'm writing about areas of expertise. And if I say the wrong thing or I do the wrong thing, then immediately my book is discredited. Right. So when I hear, the former FBI director read my book and is on the front cover of Mob Justice, when I have that kind of validation, I have the former head of the DEA, I have the former deputy attorney general, I have the highest level of DOJ input, the attorney general of the United States, recommended my first book and loves my second book. And so with that validation, it was kind of like, great. Now I just have to worry about those in the publishing world. And that's a whole different world. But I don't have any different feedback from Democrats or Republicans. Again, my books are not political, but they're hopefully liked on both sides of the aisle. But yeah, I do get a lot of feedback, and they're the ones kind of setting up the book signings for me and are really behind me. And, they've been a great encouragement. And I think that they like the fact that there's somebody who's writing, hopefully really great stories for fiction, but also that are technically correct and describe their world very accurately.
Last question. What would you like readers to take from reading Mob Justice?
I want them to have a lot of fun doing it. There is like no intentionality behind writing a book like this other than I'm going to take you behind the scenes where you're behind the curtain to see how things really work, but we're going to have a lot of fun along the way. I want people to be able to pick up my book and never put it down until they're done with it. That's my goal.
It's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Chad Boudreau. He's author of Mob Justice. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, and all the usual places. And for everything about Chad, go to Chad Boudreau, and it's spelled Boudreau. Boudreau.com, and follow him on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And Chad, thanks for being on the show.
That was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.